On Friday, we take the opportunity to turn our attention to the planet, to talk about nature and the environment. And today, in Pepper's Planet, we're talking about the mysterious decline of sharks in the False Bay area. Great white shark the population is diminishing considerably, and we have a very exciting guest, a South African writer, filmmaker, I should say award-winning filmmaker and photographer, Adam Welts. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, Adam's work includes an award-winning film about eccentric birders in New York City, and an expose of environmental crime throughout Southern Africa is also something that he specializes in. He also writes about international and African wildlife issues for Yale Environment 360, which is where we picked up on this article that he wrote about the shrinking great white population of False Bay. Adam, tell us a little bit about your journey of researching the story and where it began.
Right, so this actually started quite some time back in 2010. I was lucky enough to go on one of these shark-watching trips into False Bay to a place called Seal Island, which is a very small island in the bay that's covered with thousands and thousands of breeding Cape fur seals. And every winter, this has become known as a sort of aggregation place for great white sharks, right? Because the young seals that have been bred on the island are learning to swim, and they're very naive, and they're quite easy to catch. So great white sharks have been coming to this area every winter to feed on these young seals. And a large shark watching industry has built up around this, and of course also in Gansbaai and various other places along the southern coast. And I was just stunned by the spectacle of seeing these sharks up close, of seeing these incredible numbers of seals on this island right next to Cape Town. And it's something, I mean, I've had a lot of amazing wildlife experiences in my life. This was a top three. I mean, this is extraordinary thing to see these sharks doing these, aerial breach kills and being so close to the boats and so on. And to think that it's right next to our city was really mind-blowing. You know, it wasn't having to trek off into the wilderness or anything like that. So I've stayed in touch with these shark people since then. And one of them called me up late June and said, you know, Adam, there's a serious problem. We are really not seeing the sharks that we used to be seeing in our area, you know, anything like the numbers that we used to be seeing. And we think there's a serious problem here. And I started calling around and asking, and a whole bunch of scientists started telling me, yes, well, this is true. These famous sharks of False Bay, which are now the most famous sharks in the world because they're featured in these Air Jaws documentaries, which really are the sort of cornerstone of Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. You know, they're vanishing and they've been declining for years, but the decline has been especially sharp in the last 2 years. And I started calling more scientists, and people were saying, well, yeah, this seems to be true. Mm. And eventually I got hold of some actual numbers, because part of this story and why it's so difficult to pin down is that getting hard data on sharks is actually a lot harder than you think.
Yeah, I mean, what do we really know about why sharks would migrate to new feeding grounds?
Yeah, well, so sharks, great white sharks in particular, are pretty adaptable in terms of what they eat. They eat fish, they eat seals, they eat, you know, a bunch of things.
Anything that moves.
More or less. But they really seem to like seals, and Seal Island is certainly a good sort of feeding space for them. And sharks, great whites, move around a lot. I mean, they've put satellite tags on these things, and they go up all the way up the coast of Mozambique, and then they come back again. And there was this famous shark some years back that swam all the way to Western Australia and then came all the way back here. So they move around a lot, but there are these certain places, certain bays where they aggregate. And so it actually turns out that young sharks don't really eat many seals, because seals are quite hard to catch. Seals are extremely maneuverable, basically. It takes a while for the young sharks to figure out how to do this. Mm. So young sharks are actually more dependent on smaller sharks.
I see.
So young sharks eat smaller species of sharks like superfin sharks, smoothhound sharks, and so on, which are on the shore. And once they're a little bit older, then they learn to catch seals, and then they'll appear at Seal Island.
What is considered a young shark? I mean, sharks can live, great whites, up to 30 years. So we're talking like a 5-year-old shark?
Yeah, I'm not sure on the exact age. I would hesitate. I'm not a shark biologist myself, so I'm a bit of a landlubber, environmental journalist. my background's actually in birds, but academically speaking. But you know, certainly in the first few years, you wouldn't expect them to be hunting seals.
Yeah.
Certainly not successfully.
Exactly.
They'd be very much more dependent on smaller fish.
Mm.
And but anyway, to get back to this whole issue of people starting to tell me, well, these things are disappearing, and then I said, well, why? Because none of the shark guys can really understand, because the seals are still at Seal Island. This is still a very good place to come and feed if you're a shark.
Yeah.
Why would they be disappearing? Some folks have a theory that it's orcas, killer whales, because orcas eat white sharks. Orcas is pretty much the only predator that's, you know, higher
trumps
up the
them.
Food chain, if you like, than
but
a great white shark.
But there have been sightings of more orca pods in our oceans.
Yes, so definitely in the last 10 years, there's also been an uptick in sightings of orcas in these areas. So some people think, well, the sharks might be avoiding the orcas, and there's a little bit of evidence to support that, but it's certainly not conclusive, and nobody's gone and really nailed that down.
Mm.
The other thing that's happening, though, which is the concerning thing, and what the story drives at, is that there's a fishery, what they call a demersal longline fishery, of fishing boats that are going out and laying long fishing lines, usually with around 1,000 hooks on each line. They'll lay two lines behind the boat. Sometimes each of these lines has 2,000 hooks on it. They go even longer. And they lay these baited hooks along the sea bed or very close to it. And they do this quite in shallow areas where a lot of these young great whites are feeding.
Ah.
And they're catching species of shark like superfin shark, smoothhound shark, these smaller sharks that the great whites, the young great whites are feeding on. And a lot of these guys feel very strongly that these demersal longline fishing boats have become a lot more effective than they have been in recent years. In other words, they're learning how to target their target fish more effectively than they have in the past. And they feel that there's a very strong possibility that these guys are wiping out the food for the younger great whites. And now, this might be causing the great white population as a whole to move eastwards, because there are some reports that more and more great whites are being seen around Mussel Bay, as far as Port Alfred, Plettenberg Bay, places like this. Mm. However, you delve into that, and there are no real numbers associated with that either. In other words, I couldn't find anybody who's rigorously documenting any kind of increase
elsewhere
around these other places.
Mm. And the area that you're referring to, just to clarify for our listeners, is the False Bay
to Hans Bay area.
Right.
Now, Hans Bay has become actually the world epicenter, if you like, of shark watching. There are even more operations there, taking people out in a cage diving and so on. And it's a huge industry. I mean, they're hosting over 80,000 visitors a year. Enormous number of these people saying in tourism surveys that this is the main reason they came to South Africa.
Mm.
And of course, they're spending a whole lot of money doing other things, you know, associated with that. So the shark cage diving industry is a significant industry.
Mm.
And it draws a lot of attention to South Africa in a very positive way. It draws a lot of visitors and many, many, many millions of rands of tourism spend, and supports hundreds of jobs ultimately in these areas. This demersal longline shark fishery that a lot of the shark cage divers and some of the scientists feel might be causing a lot of problems only supports a few tens of jobs. We don't know exactly how much it's worth, probably only a few million rand, because shark meat is not that valuable compared to bony fish meat, regular fishes.
In your article, you talk about the fact that a lot of these small sharks are exported out of the country. Could you tell us a bit about that?
So if you look at the trade data that's been compiled by various experts, it seems that over the last 10 years, the vast majority of our shark meat ends up in Australia, actually, where it's sold under the name Flake. And flake is the Australian word for shark meat that's set up to try and disguise shark
what
meat.
It
in
really
a sense,
is,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, shark and chips doesn't sound quite so good. and so they, a lot of this meat has been exported to Australia. There's a few other places that it has ended up at times over the years, like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, pretty oddly, which I think must be a transshipment point. I'm almost sure they're sending it on to somewhere else from there. This is very common in wildlife trades and in fish trades to disguise the origin of whatever it is that you're shipping. You ship it via a third country. Mm-hmm. Some of it's being shipped to Vietnam. I know that Vietnam is a major seafood exporter in turn to Australia, so it's possible that Vietnam then is also just being used as a transshipment point. The point is, that's where the meat is ending up. And then a lot of these sharks are being definned, and the fins are being sent ultimately mostly to China through Hong Kong to be used in shark fin soup. Mm. But again, it's a very small industry. And overall, in the world, by value, shark is less than 1% of the value of the world's total fish catch.
Okay.
But ecologically speaking, sharks are really, really important. They're what we call apex predators, keystone predators, even these smaller species of sharks. If you remove them from ecosystems, it destabilizes the ecosystem in a way. I mean, if I can draw a very crude analogy, you know, you take away all the lions and suddenly the impala population explodes in the Kruger Park, and they'll eat every single thing they can eat, and that'll cause a whole bunch of other antelopes to starve the next year. There's a very similar role that sharks play in the ocean ecosystem than what lions play in the Kruger Park.
So are they protected, via the WWF? Or who protects? Are they red flagged? What is
okay.
it? Explain that to us.
So different species of sharks have a different legal status, right? South Africa is quite famous. One of the reasons our shark cage diving industry and tourism industry is built up so well is that in 1991, South Africa legally protected great white sharks. And we were the first country in the world to do that. Mm. We also legally protect hammerheads, for example. These are not allowed to be caught or legally targeted or anything like that. Some of these other sharks, like soupfin sharks and smoothhound sharks, is what I wrote about here, which is sort of the smaller ones that the bigger sharks eat. There is a fishery for that, this demersal longline fishery. It is permitted, but so you're allowed to apply to the government for a permit if grant these permits. But these permits were granted, a lot of them, under very strange circumstances.
And this is where the plot thickens.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit.
All right.
Essentially, the government has said, we're going to try and stop these sharks from being overfished, because the other thing we have to remember is sharks breed very slowly and grow very slowly compared to other fish. So they're very, very easy to overfish them and really hammer them, and then they take decades to recover their population, not just a few years like some other fish. So the government essentially said, we are going to control this fishery by only issuing sort of 9 permits. They said, I think it was 2014, 2013, when these things were issued, 2013. But there's basically no restriction on the boats that have permits in terms of they're allowed to fish pretty much everywhere on the south coast and the west coast, except for marine protected areas. They're allowed to fish 24 hours a day, 7 days of the week, 365 days of the year. There's no limitation on the number of hooks they can put on their lines.
But how many boats they have.
Well, no, there is a restriction on this number of boats. So this is the government. So in other words, the government restricts the fishery by what they call effort. In other words, we'll restrict the number of boats, but these boats are, to all intents and purposes, allowed to do a heck of a lot. I wouldn't say exactly what they want. The other thing is, these boats have no observers on board. In a lot of fisheries around the world now, there's this trend of having an independent observer on a boat to make sure that they're not catching the wrong stuff or, you know, illegally transshipping
things. It's like a
type
of stock take.
No,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. While the thing is happening, these boats have no observers on board. As far as I can tell, have never had any observers on board. And so there's this situation where we don't really know what they're doing. And the data, DAF is supposed to, this is the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, is supposed to document how much fish is offloaded off these boats. And they do. They have some sort of shoreside inspection system, and they write up this many tons came off the boat.
Mm.
However, they don't really release that data, and they don't really analyze it very well or very fast, because as it turns out, and as I started digging deeper into this stuff, the government's fisheries authorities are in complete disarray. I mean, they couldn't even get it together to reply to my basic media queries, or even acknowledge that I'd sent them, and I tried text messages, WhatsApps, emails, the whole works, to try and get hold of their official spokespeople. I've spoken to other journalists, and that's the same story.
Mm.
And every single source that I spoke to, both within the department, because I did speak to some people off the record inside the department and outside the department, paints a picture of a fisheries authority which is absolutely dysfunctional and very, very corrupt in lots of different ways. So let's not be too coy about it.
So, the truth is rules are not really being broken, but they haven't been defined either.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of space to do all sorts of weird stuff, and we're not monitoring our fish stocks nearly well enough to be sure that we're not overfishing a whole lot of things. And as I say, when these great white sharks, which are the apex predators, which are keystone sort of indicator species, start disappearing from one of their best-known feeding grounds, not just one, I mean, they're disappearing from False Bay and Hans Bay and even as far as Cape Infanta, we should be starting to pay attention. I mean, if again, I'll draw the Kruger Park analogy. If a whole bunch of people went to the Kruger Park and suddenly they weren't seeing lions anymore and there were indications that the lions had disappeared, I think there'd be a sort of a natural outcry.
Yeah.
But now it's in the ocean, and as so many of these frustrated biologists and so on told me, you know, it's out of sight and out of mind.
Absolutely. I'm talking to, my guest this afternoon is wildlife journalist, photographer and filmmaker Adam Welts, about how great white sharks' numbers are diminishing in our waters. We're going to take a short break and then get back to the conversation.
Cape Talk. Call us on 021-446-0567.
Welcome back to the show. It is 25 minutes past two, and we have been talking to filmmaker Adam Welts, who has written a very interesting article on very worrying diminishing numbers of great whites in the False Bay area. We've got a caller on the line now, Roy from Simonstown, who agrees with you.
Hi Roy. I'm Bianca. Yeah, I live overlooking the harbour, and the two fisheries protection vessels, it's the Ruth First and the, I think it's the Lillian Goy, sit in the harbor here for months. They never leave. From what I hear from people involved, they just don't have the staff to run these vessels. And I think a few years ago, they were taken over by the Navy, by one of our defense ministers who thought she knew what she was doing, or the fisheries ministry or something, but they're completely ineffectual. So I support you entirely there. And what people don't seem to understand is that when one species collapses, it is a domino effect, which perhaps in this case we're only going to see in a few generations' time.
So true, Roy. Your point is so valid, and reiterating, of course, what my guest has been saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's an overall failure of governance when it comes to fisheries in South Africa. And the further I look into it, the more failures I find. And these failures have been ongoing for years. They just seem to be getting worse. I mean, the few competent, honest people left in the government departments like Environmental Affairs and Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries who are trying to do a good job, they find themselves more and more curtailed by their political superiors. Management decisions in terms of who gets a fishing permit and who doesn't get made more and more on a political sort of basis.
Mm.
Scientists are supposed to provide the government managers with data that says, listen, we can take X many tons of this type of fish this year without crashing the stock. And these are now more and more just simply ignored, and permits are handed out seemingly without serious regard to this. I hear over and over again from independent independent scientists, for example, in the universities, that DAF and DIA just refuses to share any data with them.
Yeah. So how do you get the stats?
Well, I mean, this is the big problem, is that DAF sits on a whole lot of this information. They log certain catch, you know, data and so on. Mm. They're supposed to analyze it in-house. This seems to take them years at the best of times. Sometimes they don't do it at all.
DAF is, just to reiterate, it's the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Right. Those are the folks that issue fishing permits, essentially, and are supposed to analyze fishing stocks in this country.
When last did they release something?
Well, I mean, they're supposed to release things every year, but I mean, what you generally find is that they'll do a so-called stock assessment on a fish type only every few years, maybe sometimes every 10 or every 15 years. So a lot of this data is wildly out of date. And then even in the academic sphere, so let's say the universities where scientists are actually studying, trying to look at numbers and so on. There is an imperative for scientists, or not an imperative, I would say there's an incentive for a lot of these scientists not to really talk to each other because they're in competition. Each one wants to be published in a more prestigious journal than the other to advance their career. So they tend to hold back data for a number of years until they've sort of fully analyzed it. And then the whole process of getting published in a journal can take 2 years easily. So often, you know, you'll see a scientific paper that's dated 2018 about great white sharks. Mm. And you'll think, oh, great, this is up-to-date data. And you read it. And actually, it's about a survey that took place in 2013. And it's taken them 5 years to go through this process. So we're sitting here, in a sense, flying blind. We have no idea. Our great white shark populations off the South African coast, which recently have never been estimated at the most optimistic estimate I've seen is about 720 animals, which is a tiny population. Now, we're sitting in a situation where we don't know. Are they crashing? Aren't they crashing? Are they moving? What's happening? Are we on the precipice of seeing our great whites going extinct? Nobody knows.
So just in a final question, because unfortunately we are running out of time, who's going to save them? What is the solution?
Well, I mean, I think a good first step would be for a lot of the academics to set aside their petty, academic differences and ambitions. And I think, and I've spoken to a bunch of really smart scientists who think that if they pool their data, even if DAF and the government doesn't come to the party with their data, if the independent and university scientists sit down and pool their data, we could start to get a much more reliable and up-to-date picture about what is happening with these sharks. And we need to get out there and do a major, you know, much bigger research push than we've had at the moment. People need to throw some money at this problem now, and we need to figure out where our sharks have gone.
Thank you so much. Very wise words from photographer, filmmaker, and wildlife journalist Adam Welts, my guest today.